And the first question was from Pavan Krishna Prabhu.
Yes.
What is the sadhana?
Sadhana, yes. Many things could be said about that, but I shall answer by saying what is fresh in my mind, heard from Srila Guru Maharaj. And it occurred when a devotee visiting the Mat in Navadvip, as when they arrive and they're hearing from Guru Maharaj, and he said, you know, what should be my service now that I'm here at the Mat? And what's the most important service? Some would say there's practical aspects to service, but then there's the substance of that very thing. And so Srila Guru Maharaj's answer, at least to me, is a little surprising. And he said, what is most important is to acquire the proper angle of vision. He said, throughout and everywhere, that is the most important thing. To acquire the proper angle of vision. Because we could say in answer to this question, typically or conventionally, someone might start talking about certain spiritual practices or things that we do, and that wouldn't be incorrect. But Guru Maharaj is getting to the heart of the matter. Why do we do these things? When is an activity a ritual, and when is it full of substance, spiritual substance? Often people complain about religion, the ritualistic aspect. Even Krishna, little almost joking, as Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men are preparing for the Indra Puja, Indra Yajna, the annual festival honoring and worshiping Indra. And Krishna, feigning ignorance, says like, oh, what's going on here? You know, like, oh, we're preparing for the annual Indra Yajna and Puja. And he's saying, "Is what's the reason for that? Is it?" And then he suggests what it might be. One of which he says is this just one of those things? Like it's a tradition, and we all do it, but nobody really knows why. And then we think, "Oh, gee, that sounds like a world we can relate to." Right? He says that it's just like we do it, but nobody really, you know, it's just a thing we do year after year, and so we're caught up in that. And then many things unfold from there, culminating in Krishna shifting everything, that everything that's been gathered for Indra shall be offered to Giriraj Govardhan. And I like to say, referencing the famous, one of the famous quotes of Christ where he said, you know, render to Caesar that which is Caesar, render to God that which is God's. You know, this, because people say, how do we balance our secular life and responsibilities with our religion? And that, and often that is, well, and Caesar in any context may mean the government or the powers that be, or give to them what belongs to them and give to God what belongs to God. So that's one way of looking at it. And quite pragmatic, in fact. Not finding fault there. But what we learn in Govardhan Puja is render to God what is Caesar's. That's different. What is meant for them? We shall also give that. We'll give everything to him. Sarva dharmam paritaja mam ekam sharanam braja. What Krishna, after saying so, exploring so many what if options with Arjuna, says, look, just give up everything and surrender to me. But what about my societal family obligations? You know, Masujaha Hungtwam Sarva Papebyo. Any pop or sinful reaction you might incur from apparently being negligent of societal family obligations, moksha, I'll take care of that, right? For whom everything is ultimately meant. And so inevitably always we come to what the substance of the matter is. So Srila Guru Maharaj said, the whole of sadhana is this, is encapsulated in this realization, acquiring the proper angle of vision. And when that is there, the activities become meaningful. I like to invoke the Rupa Goswami, Prabhu Sangha, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhavyed Graham Indiye. At the time of Harinam, to say the Nam of Krishna, the Rupa of Krishna, the gun qualities of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, they're all beyond the grasp of the senses, the mind, intelligence. So then what are we doing? Sevan mukhe hijyavaro shayameva sportida. But when one is sevan mukata, it means the current of service or devotion is flowing, then shayameva spuratira. There may be revelation of the nama, rupa, guna, lila, the name, forms, past qualities, pastimes of the Lord. So we're told three categories we can conceive. Sambandha, abideya, prayojan. Sambandha, most often rendered as relationship, but we can also, in this context, refer to it as perspective, right? Way of seeing. Like the word darshan, everyone, I think the word is very popular outside of India now too, you know, or something. I'd like to get your darshan, or we're coming, you know. We're going to have darshan of the deities. Guru Maharaj reminds us, what is our capacity to see the deity? Minuscule, very little, I think. But Krishna can see us, so let's, darshan means to present ourselves to the deity. Acknowledging our seeing capacity is limited, being clouded by acquired prejudice and tendency. But that's one meaning of darshan. But you'll hear in Vedic philosophy, you know, shat darshan means six philosophies of India. Darshan also means philosophy. And how does it mean philosophy? Meaning a viewpoint, a perspective, a way of seeing. What is the primal guru mantra? Om, I chanted at the beginning, Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I remember learning that the first day I joined. I had to go somewhere. They sent me to downtown San Francisco for some purpose, and I memorized, and I was happily singing this all day. And to this day, I'm still singing it. And because it's so beautiful and rich. And what is being acknowledged here, the disciple is giving obeisances to my Sri Guruve Namaha, to Sri Guru for what? He's saying, my eyes are, you know, blinded by ignorance. Then we can understand this is some metaphorical representation, but it's a reference to blindness, being unable to see. Blinded by what? Do you know that verse? The hankara nivrittanam kesu nahiduraga. Rishaya, Parbata Rishaya, I forget the rest. Means, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Vinod bole hai hai, Haridas hari nahi bhai. Vinod is lamenting, oh, what is wrong? Krishna, who's nearest and dearest to me, can't be found anywhere. I can't see him anywhere. So he's lamenting, hi, hi, oh, what is wrong? Why? And what does the other verse say? Why he can't be seen? Although he's nearest and dearest, sometimes described as being in our heart, the core of our consciousness, a mountain of ego obstructing the view. Right? So the disciple, and Gurudev gave one talk famously titled Demolishing the Pillars of Ego. So in this verse, the disciple is expressing their gratitude, saying, I was blinded by the darkness of ignorance. I mean, forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna. Bhayam dityad binibeshitat syad ishadapetasya viparyayo smriti. There it is. Forgetfulness. Unable to remember. Being suspicious of the Absolute, of Krishna. Not perceiving that our interest is represented in the Absolute interest. Like Guru Maharaj could use many things in his talks because he's so well-educated, and anything he ever learned, he remembered. He's not the kind of person who learns something for the test and then forget it. So he could quote American Revolution or Hitler, you know, the Russians, anybody, the English writers. But here he said, as they said in American Revolution, no taxation without representation. That was their big point. We're being taxed and there's no one representing us among those who are imposing the tax. So he said, this idea, that makes us suspicious of monarchy. No taxation without representation. But when this is applied to the Absolute, it's a sad thing, it's offensive. We're thinking like, we distrust that our interest is being represented in the Absolute. So, Guru Maharaj in Search for Sri Krishna, but one of the breakers heading says, you know, autocrat, despot, liar. Now, normally, if you look in your prayer book, you know, ways of addressing the Supreme Lord, autocrat, despot, and liar probably won't be in the list. But it's in Guru Maharaj's. Saraswati Thakur used to say, the transcendental autocrat. When we hear about autocracy, we're like, whoa, wasn't that in the dark ages? You know, before humanism and democracy? Autocracy, monarchy, such things. And they have a point within conditional existence. But when you're dealing with the unconditioned absolute, he is described as a transcendental autocrat. Should there be any check on his autocracy? He's saying, well, we need to get together and talk about this. How much power are we going to give him? Like we do, and they'll say, well, the founding fathers, they made a system of checks and balances, the executive branch, the judiciary, and the, what's the other one? Senate, House of Representatives, Congress, but it has a name. in so-called representative democracy. And this way we will check the autocracy of an individual who might go mad with power. Another one said, yes, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And everyone else said, absolutely. So Guru said, but when you apply this sort of thing towards Krishna or the Absolute, you become a loser. In Hegelian terms, reality is for itself and by itself. He exists to fulfill his own purpose, not your lower purpose, our lower purpose. He exists to fulfill his own purpose. Don't think, oh, well, what is that? Is that something good? I hope so. Like Mother Yashoda, she thinks, if I don't chastise Krishna, he could become a wayward absolute. That would be bad for everyone, right? If Krishna wasn't raised properly, being the absolute and all. There are delightful contradictions as we go higher in Krishna consciousness. Nanda Maharaj, when people are saying, your son is some sort of devata, God. Your son, no, he's deva deva. He's God of, he's God himself. Nanda Maharaj, I don't care who you say he is. He's my son and he's living in my house and he has to follow my rules. Even with Krishna. Same with, you know, Jagannath Misra and Sachi Mata and Nimai. That's the strength of Vatsalya Rasa. You could talk all day and night about Krishna's divinity and he's this, that, and the other thing, and the conclusion of me, he's my son, I don't care what you say. And it's my responsibility to take care of him and raise him. So the transcendental autocrat, reality is for itself and by itself. And they say, well, what is he up to? What is that absolute up to? Well, anandamayo byasa. Vedanta said, by nature, he's full of anandam. And that's not just generic, off-the-shelf happiness or a drop of water in the desert type happiness. This is anandam, satchit anandam, satyam shivam sundaram. Right? Ecstasy to an infinite degree. When Srila Rupa Goswami is giving a comparison, first we should say, similar to the Mohamudgura Stotram of Shankaracharya, some parallel, won't go there, but Jamunacharya, Yadavadi Mama Cheta Krishna Padaravinde Nava Nava Rasa Dhamana Danta Dhamana Muntuma Ashit, and then it goes on, Nari Sangame. So he's saying, since I've realized, come in connection with Krishna consciousness, even what is generally considered the highest type of mundane pleasure, not only am I not interested in that, but like if there's some lingering recollection of that, I'm like, ugh, shuddering in disgust. That's what he says. And we're told, the Brahmanandis, right? Brahmananda, we hear about that. Swami Maharaj named one of his disciples Brahmananda. Any moment the name Brahmananda has to be very big. You can't be like a skinny guy and be named Brahmananda. Just like anyone I've ever met in India named Ganesh is a guy like this, and you know, with a big belly, and that's all. Who's he? Ganesh. Oh, how'd you guess? Lucky guess. But Brahmananda. And the Brahmanandis, that means from their spiritual realization, they've gone beyond the modes of nature, tama, rajas, sattva, into the that interim generic spiritual stage, and the pleasure of that is so great that the greatest material pleasure, sex pleasure, is of no interest to them. Right? Brahmananda. So what is Rupa Goswami? Because that's like a base point. If you were going to then make a chart, that would be your baseline, Brahmananda. Unlike, from the Western point of view, it would be like the high end. In Indian theism, it would be the baseline of the chart, Brahmananda, for beginners, starters. Okay. Those have a generic spiritual conception. So what does Rupa Goswami say using that as a baseline? Brahmananda, Brahmananda bhavedesha, chet purarta, guni krita, naiti bhakti sukham bodhe, paramanu tulamapi. He's saying, if you take the pleasure of Brahmananda and multiply it a trillionfold, it's not equal to an atomic fraction of the pleasure, the anandam, derived from Krishna Bhakti Rasa. Now, even if we don't understand that in terms of the specifics, right? Just hearing that, you'd have to at least wonder. It should pique your interest. Like, what some people are saying, the highest thing, this person, Sri Rupa, is saying, multiply that a trillion times and it's not equivalent to an atomic fraction of the pleasure derived from Krishna consciousness. Well, then what is that pleasure of Krishna consciousness? Please tell me all about it. And where to get some. So, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan. Prayojan means the conclusion, but it also means fruit. So like if you had a mango seed, what would that would be your starting point, and then Sambandha, and then there would be some Abhideya, like how do you grow this mango seed to reach its Prayojan, to get the fruit? Right. So some will say, oh, then sadhana is more like in these earlier two. And what comes to mind is the statement, Krishna prema nitya siddha sadhya kabunoi shravanadi shuddha chite koroye udoi. It's actually what we seek is innate to the soul, but covered under layers of karma and gyan, acquired prejudice, misconception. And that necessitates coming in connection with a properly conceiving agent, hearing from them, and readjusting ourselves with what is heard. It's like even the art critics, they will point out, it's fairly consistent view held, they'll say, the artist's project is to give new ways of seeing. That's how. Otherwise, if you just say, here's my painting of a bowl of fruit, they can go, oh, okay. You know, or here's my painting of a guitar. You go, oh, it looks like a guitar. But if you say, here's Picasso's painting of a guitar, they go, oh my God, that's it. Oh, I, yeah, that's a, oh, it's a guitar, but it's, and then so many things can be seen. Right? When they asked him, the one eye's here, he's a master painter. If you see a portrait of like his one of his wives, Dormar, like he, it's a perfect portrait of a beautiful woman. But if you look at some of the other, like Dormar with a cat, and you see this almost hideous, grotesque figure, but you see some one eye here, one eye over there. And so a less qualified person is saying, like, gee, doesn't he know like that the eye, there's symmetry in the eye? Like, why why did he do that? And they asked Picasso, and he said, Because if I put them together, you won't look at them. But if I put one here and one there, then you'll look at each one very carefully. So he's doing with the artist project, new ways of seeing, new descending a staircase. Right? Who's that? Duchamp or someone. Forgive me if I'm wrong. Art people. But you see, oh, it's like what you see when you run a series of images together, but in slow motion, or... But he's doing that, so he's giving you a new way to see this. So they said the artist project is giving new ways of seeing. And not just limited to visual arts, literary arts. You come in connection with characters and, oh, I didn't know. People thought like that. Or hearing that, you say, oh, I can understand. There are many characters like this in the world. It's broadening your vision of things. But that's just within the realm of time and space. So then, and this is why I say, the artist project and the spiritual project have some parallel. Because what do we say in that mantra? We're praising Guru for giving us a new way of seeing. Sambandhagyan. What I'm seeing before me, I'm now seeing it in a new way. Because of the guide. Once I was in Bombay and Buleshwar, going to Buleshwar, this place where they sell all different types of devotional paraphernalia. But during the day, I was in another, like more near the Taj Mahal hotel. And some, I don't know the name of the square there, but some, the circle, circus, you know, some famous area. And one gentleman wearing like a suit, but kind of like a, how would you describe, a white shirt that's no longer so white. You know, that, no, that would be nice. Just like so old, so many, it's maybe hasn't been cleaned that so recently. Forget the word, but, you know, and with a coat and pants, dressed like, you know, suited and booted, as they say. But I, this man approaches me and says, because he sees I have a camera, and he goes like, would you like to go on a tour? And I'm saying, oh, no. I'm saying, this is someone who's going to try and scam me. So I go, no, sir, no, thank you, no. Yeah. He said, do you know where you are? And we're standing, and he goes, you see that building over there? In 1896, he told the history of that building. You see over there? Right. In the end of the 18th century, and from where we were standing, everything, only there, not let's go look at, you know, a famous monument. From where we're standing, he started telling me everything that was before my eyes. And now I was seeing everything completely differently. It was just a bunch of buildings, buildings that I knew nothing about. Each one, he told me its history, why it was there, when it was created, what happened there, what significant events, and a whole new world opened to me. And I said, yes, I want to go on your tour. Because I could understand, he was a qualified guide. So from where you are, not like, oh, we have to go to India, get a ticket and go to India so we can see something. By all means, do. But if you don't have the eyes, you won't see it. Even if you go to India, even if you go to Vrindavan, Navadvip, etc. Like Guru said, you have to acquire Navadvip eyes to see Navadvip. Otherwise, we'll see so many things contrary to Navadvip there, and will become bewildered. When devotees went in the beginning, and they sometimes people go like, red-faced monkey, you know. And they'd come back. They were calling us and said, red monkey. The local children, seeing these white people, Shaivs. And then Guru Maharaj started explaining why this contrast is there, to sort of push you a little, to consider what is generally spiritual and what is not. It's not like you're in an amusement park. Everything there is for your amusement. And everyone's trained because you're a paying customer to treat you well. So, the necessity of the guide. And I mean, it's from where we are at present and our relative circumstance, from that point, the valuable guide can say, begin to go this way from your present position. Stane stita shrutigatam tanuvan manobir. The first thing accepted by Mahaprabhu in terms of the suggestions of Ramananda Roy. Because in the beginning, Mahaprabhu was saying, well, what is the ultimate goal of life? How do you achieve that? You know, oh, varnasrama charavata purushena parakramam vishnur arajate pungsang nanyat tat doshakarjanam. Through varnasram system, organize four varnas, four ashrams, then gradually you can. Mahaprabhu, iho baha, age ka, say, no. Then he's quoting Gita slokas. Even Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochiti Nakanshuti Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Varam. Saying from this Brahma Bhuta position, realizing the spiritual nature of everything, then you can make your approach. That's external because means you're outside the door, you haven't yet entered. So going further, further, until when he says, Gyane priyasamudapasana manta eva. Stop trying to measure him. Stop trying to measure the infinite by your finite means. Right? Faith is another type that exceeds conventional measurement. Gyane priyasamudapasana manta eva. You cannot, that plane will not become an object of your inspection with your microscope or your telescope or your ontological microscope or your ontological telescope. He reveals himself to whom he chooses, through whom he chooses. Nayamatma pravachanena labhyo namedaya na bahuna srutena tome vaishya vivrinute tena labhyas tashaisha atma vivrinute tanum swam. New Upanishad. It's up to him and his favored choice, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vaishnav, particularly through his agent, his devotee. And by hearing from them, we get new eyes, Dibya Drishti. Guru said, Diksha means that. New eye, Dibya Drishti, Upanayan. Sometimes it means, not that. This, the Upavit, Upanayan, but also Upanayan means new eyes, new way of seeing. That is what we acquire when we're situated at the lotus feet of Sri Guru. And without that, to say, do this so many times a day, do that, walk like this, talk like that, will not necessarily give the desired result. We have to submit ourselves, present ourselves for reconceptualization at the lotus feet of Sri Guru. Arjuna's giving his own estimation of things, and Krishna's smiling. Then, Sishyas Teham Sarimam Tvam Prapanam, like Prapana Jivanam, when he surrenders to Krishna, then he's now become a little quiet and listening. Anaryajastam Asvargyam Akirti Karamarjana. This says, Anarya, you're not speaking like an Aryan who has some depth of spiritual vision. You're speaking like a man of the world. And this, Akirti Karma, this won't be good for your reputation. Asvarga, and also, and you won't go to heaven. I mean, he's talking like that in the beginning. But in the end, just surrender to me. And what does Arjuna say in response? Sometimes Prabhupada would say, euphemistically, the supreme mantra. Or we think, Maha mantra? What? He said, Karishe Vachanam Tava. Means, I'm prepared to do what you say. Right? Guru Maharaj the Gurudev. Are you prepared to listen to me and not your own mind? If that is not there, then what is sadhana? You won't go from sambandha to prayojan by any means. And Saraswati Thakur makes this clear in the Prakriti Rasa Shatadushini that really there must be sambandha gyan for there to be devotion proper. The right perspective, as Guru said, the proper angle of vision, how to see. When Krishna, a last-ditch attempt at a negotiated settlement between Arjuna, Pandavas, and the Kauravas, tried to effect a diplomatic solution. They meet in the assembly. Dhritarashtra is there, so many sages, Pandavas, everyone. And Duryodhana realizes, because Arjuna has already said, I only want Krishna. He realizes, oh, there's Krishna. If we capture Krishna, our job is done. You know, we don't even have to have a whole war, just get Krishna. So he's saying, apprehend him. Then what does Krishna do? Divides into like 8 Krishnas, 16 Krishnas, 32, 64, 128. You get the idea. And they're going, which one? And then he starts showing Virat Rupa, innumerable forms, and all time, all space, all creation, including everything and everyone, all rolled into one in an ever-expanding universal form. And they're like, and sages, as they are wont to do, began offering, my Lord, you are so good. They began offering heartfelt praise. And Dhritarashtra, who's blind, said, what is that? What? And he can understand something amazing is being manifested before everyone. And he's saying, my Lord, he knows in his heart who's Krishna. My Lord, he's saying, please, you have the power to remove my blindness just for a moment, a few moments. Remove my blindness and let me see this divine form of yours. And Krishna says, it's not necessary that I remove your blindness. If I will that you will see this, you will see it. And Gurumar said, and the blind man saw. By the will of Krishna. Not that, oh, if remove my mundane blindness and then, no, Dibya Drishti. If I will that you see this, you will see it. And one of the reasons I mention this is we may think, and rightfully so, oh, we're blinded by provincialism, acquired prejudice and tendency, and relative circumstance. So sometimes we feel hopeless. Like, oh, will the Lord ever be revealed to me? I'm so unqualified, fallen, and blinded by lust, desire, mundane ambition and aspiration. But Krishna, if my will that you see me, you will see me. So when we situate ourselves at the lotus feet of Sri Guru and offer ourselves in service, then we're told that the nature of pure devotion, of pure devotees is such, they do not allow a pin prick through which any remuneration can pass to them. Rupa Goswami describes Daruka as an example, Krishna's charioteer. One seva, service of his, is fanning. So sometimes he's fanning, and sometimes he's seeing reality the beautiful. Yung Shama Sundarama Chintagunas Rupam, the inconceivable beauty of Krishna, and he realizes his good fortune. Who can get such a position? And some shivering and ecstatic symptoms and waves begin moving upon his form. And one is stumbled. He becomes stunned. Cannot fan. Just like a statue. An ecstatic statue. A conscious, ecstatic, Chinmoy conscious, ecstatic statue. And what do we hear from Rupa Goswami? He's saying, curse that ecstasy, because I can't do my seva. He's not thinking, oh, this is really enjoyable. I'm in a deep state of ananda. No, he's thinking, why did this have to come now? I should be fanning and I can't move. He's cursing that. Why does Rupa Goswami give that example? And Srimati Radharani, whose eyes are flooded with tears of ecstatic joy, but it's blurring the sweet form of Krishna and making her upset. So Guru Maharaj said, in reference to the sloka in the Anjalila, Das Kori Beton Mori Deho Premadan. Maharaj said, Daskor, I'm your servant. Beton means salary. Daskori, beton mori, deho premadan. Just give me prem. I think, oh, he's asking for enjoyment? No, prem. It is when the service rendered is remunerated in prem. Guru Maharaj introduces the conception, economic conception of compound interest. The devotee, instead of relishing that, they're increasing their serving capital. So the serving capital produced some interest in the form of prema. What do? Take that interest, expand the serving capital. More interest comes, more expanded serving capital. That's the nature of pure devotion. So, Guru Maharaj says in his final days, Saraswati Thakur often said, religion means proper adjustment. So that means necessarily finding oneself in variety of circumstances and employing the proper angle of vision, how to see things. Jnani Prasamada Pasamada, Jivanti Satmukarita. Hear from the sadhus, Hanmukaritam, Babadiya Bhartam, Stanestita Srutikatam, Srutikatam, Tanuban Manuva. Hearing from whatever your situation is, begin hearing from them, then you'll become properly adjusted. Your eyes, Divya Drishti, Dibyam Gyanam Tatoyat Kuryat Papas, or something. Your divine eyes will be, way of seeing will be there. That's And Guru Maharaj says, that is sadhana. That is what makes sadhana meaningful. Ye prayasa jita jito piyasi taishtrilokyam. Krishna, one name is Ajita, means unconquerable. Yet, we hear he's conquered through devotion. The unconquerable is conquered by devotion. Is that not some sort of contradiction? Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa. Krishna, he is all attractive. Everyone is being irresistibly drawn towards the absolute center of beauty, love, charm, and sweetness, Krishna. But that Krishna, Guru said, what? And Rupa Goswami, Sri Krishna, what is the nature of Krishna Bhakti devotion? All attractive Krishna is irresistibly drawn in attraction to bhakti rasa, to devotion, a drop of that substance. In the heart of even a finite soul, so valuable that the infinite comes under the control of the finite as a consequence. That is devotion. Once I wrote something in praise of Srila Prabhupada, quoting Guru Maharaj, saying, he had wholly offered himself on the altar of self-sacrifice to the order of Srila Saraswati Thakur, wholly emptying himself of any other desires. And Guru Maharaj said, so much so that divine power had to come down and work on his behalf. So this was in a Vyas Puja offering, and it went through proofreaders and other people, but one person saw it and became upset and said, Krishna doesn't have to do anything. What is being said here? He had to come down. Yeah. And then my friend came and said, someone has objected. They said, this line here is objectionable. Krishna doesn't have to do anything. Think, yeah, that's true. But read the Bhagavatam. Ahang bhakta paradino hyaspantantra ivadvija. Sarubir bhakta hridayo bhaktair bhakta janapriya. Svatantra here means, I get the meaning. Janmadyasya yatonvayad itaratas cha arteshu abhignya swarat. He's independent. So he didn't have to do anything. He's not under the control of anyone. But, so, first establish that, reality for itself, by itself. But that Krishna, the Supreme Reality, is for himself, by himself, who's Swarat, he says, in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, in the Ambarish section, that in the presence of my devotees, who know nothing other than me, have nothing other than me in their hearts, it's as if I lose my independence. I have nothing other than them in my heart. It's reciprocal. You become a slave of Krishna, Krishna becomes a slave of the devotee. It's one thing to say slaves of Krishna, even that we go, I don't know. Couldn't it be like servant or, you know, executive secretary? This devotee in Russia many years ago gave me his business card and it said, you know, so-and-so das, Brahmin, pundit. I said, really? Guru Maharaj said, slave. Dasi, I told, you know, dasi means slave girl. We go, no, but maid servant, so much, you know, sweeter. Also means slave girl. Dasi. And then Guru Maharaj, to take it further, and not even directly the slave, slave of the slave, the slave's slave. And you go, ooh, we overcame that. You know, that's back in the Middle Ages, humanism, all that good stuff. We're way beyond that now. We have representative democracy. But not with the transcendental autocrat. But wait to hear the other part. If when Yeyatamam Prabhadyante Tams Tateva Bajamyaham, Krishna said, the way you approach me, I approach you. Then you mean we could, not that we would say this aloud, but as an observation, that means for one who becomes the slave of Krishna, Krishna becomes, he reciprocates that with offering himself as their slave. Like the absolute. And where is that is devotion. Otherwise, when those ladies in Vrindavan, Krishna's a toddler, and they, the gopis, they tell him to do things, like, bring me that. And Krishna goes, picks something up and brings it to them. They go, dance, Gopal, dance. And he starts dancing for them. Something that they pick that up, bring that to me, and it's too heavy. He has innumerable universes plant on the hoods of Ananta, right? But he can't pick it up. He's a toddler, a prakriti lila. So what is Krishna? He goes, you know, too heavy to lift. I tried my best. But he can lift Govardhan with his left hand, if it is his will. Right. So, that sweet dancing absolute. The infinite comes under the control of the finite through love and affection, devotion. That's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. It seems unfair. It is. Because even if the finite gives their entire self, what is that compared to the infinite? But that is the mercy of Krishna. Yet we think like, I've given this much, how much more am I expected to give? He's the infinite. So you give this finite and you get the infinite in exchange. The exchange rate is not equitable. Krishna says that in Gita, in the Bhagavatam, in one place he says, Mukti Dadati Karhichit Smana Bhakti Yogam. He said, you know, there are some people, speaking of sadhana, they ostensibly they're devotees and they're doing devotional activities, but they want to get something from me. They're doing Krishna Krishna, but they want to get something from me. He said, so I give them mukti, and they're really happy and they go away. He said, then I have these, there's another class. They're really my devotees at heart, but sometimes they have some other desires. Like jata shradamat katasu nirvina sarva karmasu. It's embarrassing to them. They think, oh, after all of this, still lingering lust, desire, mundane ambition. But they repent that. He said, if they approach me to fulfill their mundane desires, I don't reciprocate that. I give them devotion because that's what they really want. So it's saying, mukti, he's given it out freely. Devotion, not so much. Because devotion brings Krishna under the control of the devotee. Who can be entrusted with that? What finite can be entrusted to control the infinite? Unless their interest is one, transparent. So that's the Bhagavatam. But that's the Bhagavatam in around the fifth canto. But if we get to the Bhagavatam in the tenth canto, Krishna tells the Brajagopis, having observed the kind of love and affection in their heart, their Krishna Prem, after pushing them away, teasing them, and mercilessly, nothing can break them. They're unconditional servitors. And Krishna is astonished to see what they have in their hearts and says, the sloka begins, Napareham Nirvajasam Yujam. He's saying, I cannot reciprocate. You made me break my promise. I said in Bhagavad Gita, as you surrender to me, I reciprocate that. And now here I find I'm unable to keep my promise, because what is in your heart is so valuable. Giving myself fully is not equitable to what you're giving to me. So I admit defeat. And perhaps this really is where the statement, let virtue be its own reward, sprung from. He's saying this kind of thing. But Guru Maharaj took it to another level. In the Chaitanyastakam of Rupa Goswami, Sureshanam Durgam Gati Ati Chaino Panishadam Muninam Sarva Panatapatanam Madhurima Vinyasa Premno Nikila Pashu Palambujadrisam Satchaitanya Kame Punar Pidushor Yashativadam. Admitting defeat, these in Gaur Lila, remember, they're all of Mahaprabhu's principal associates, not all, most, are Brajagopis, Sakis and Manjris. And they're seeing Krishna, now his Radha Bhava Duti Subalita, enveloped in the heart and halo of Radharani, and he's singing the, like her, the praises of Krishna. So they're thinking, look at Krishna. Look what happened to Krishna. Now he's singing the glories of our mistress. He's adopted her position. How wonderful is that? So Guru Maharaj said, when Krishna said, I can't reciprocate, then what can he do? I can descend in this world and tell everyone how great you are and experience that myself. That I would like to do. The greatest preacher of all is Srimati Radharani, because she converted Krishna to Krishna consciousness. Krishna Chaitanya. Guru Maharaj like that, because Swami Maharaj said, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But ISKCON, Guru Maharaj said, why ISKCON? I don't know. And Swami Maharaj said, well, like ISHAKCON. Guru Maharaj said, oh, haha. But Guru Maharaj is like, Krishna consciousness. He's like, Krishna Chaitanya. So, Krishna, he's Adi Purush, the original enjoyer, the original male. As we were saying the other day, Krishna, we offer Krishna bhog. We don't offer Krishna prasadam. Right? Krishna doesn't eat prasadam. I'm telling. Well, I guess I am. We offer bhog to Krishna. And the remnants of Krishna are prasad. What is that beautiful line about Danishta, Radha Peye, in the Bhogarati song? Huh? Lalita. Something. She's, Danishta's taking the remnants, you know. Radharani is taking the remnants from Krishna. Right? That is the beginning. Why, when Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas and wandering like in a childlike stupor and the madness of divine love, Kahan Krishna Prananath Murali Vadan, Kahan Karun Kahan Pan Brajendra Nandan. He's running towards Vrindavan, but after a few days, calmed down. Then he said, oh, Jagannath said, come for my darshan first. Not to go to Vrindavan now, come to Puri. On the way to Puri, where they stop? Kirchor Gopinath. This pastime isn't included there because it just happened to be on the way. Leela has a way of arranging those things, doesn't it? By divine arrangement of Yoga Maya and Leela Shakti, happens to be on the way, Kirchor Gopinath, first stop. And what is there? We hear there about Madhavendra Puri, his pastimes with Gopal, rubbing the sandalwood, then what? The Ayidina Dayadranatha He Maturanatha Kadava Lakshase Slok. If you rub it like the Malaya Chandan, so much revelation will come. What came from the heart of Radharani expressed at the time of the passing of Madhavendra Puri and relished by Mahaprabhu, not a fourth man, that comes out there immediately. And what? While they're there, he tells the story of Madhavendra Puri, which includes the pulling Gopal out of the forest, installing on Govardhan Hill, and going for the Chandan and Karpur and Puri and stopping there, and the Kheer of Gopinath. Before that, we can say, he was just Gopinath. I knew him when he was just Gopinath. In the old days. After that, he was Kirchor Gopinath. I knew him before he took to a life of thievery. A good absolute, a sweet absolute. Later he started stealing. You know, it happens. For Madhavendra Puri, he steals the cure. So, but the point I mean to make is, so Mahaprabhu is there, and that pujari brings, there are 12 pots of kheer offered. He brings 7 to Mahaprabhu. Right? And I believe they keep 5. But one could say, he is Gopinath, Krishna. Why does he want, so eager to taste the kheer? As bhog, it was already offered to him. He already tasted everything. Now he's greedy for kheer? Why? Because now Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalita Swabhaktebhya Sudham Nijabhajanam Mudram Upadishan. Now he's covered by the heart and halo of Radharani. He's a devotee, not like Krishna's enjoyer. Now he's not in the mood of enjoyer. Now as devotee, he relishes prasad. That's, why is it prasad? It's come in connection with the nectar of the lips of Krishna. That he wants to relish. That can only be relished from the position of a devotee. So Radharani converted Krishna into a devotee. What greater convert is that? As Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, unable to reciprocate the premic hearts of the Radharani and Brajagopis, he descends in this world as Mahaprabhu, Jari Gorna Hoite Taviki Hoite, Kamuni Doritam Dehe, Radhar Mahima Prema Rasasima Jagata Janatake. Radhar Mahima, her glories, Prema Rasa Sima, and what are the limits of Krishna Prema? Mahabhav Swarupini Radha Thakurani. He also is celebrating Radha Dasyam. which is the goal of all of these activities that we are engaged in under the guidance and direction of our Guru Varga. And our sadhana, to be meaningful, there has to be a proper angle of vision of these things extended to us by the grace of Sri Guru. Hari Krishna. Hari Hari Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namaha.